We begin the current daf, Masechet Baba Basra, daf Nun. Begin 5 lines down at the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues asking on the inference we had in the previous daf. And that is, the Gemara had said from the halacha of our Mishnah, which said the different individuals that although they're performing the act of a chazaka, they don't have the halachic equivalent of a chazaka, because chazaka presupposes that the reason why you have it and no one contests it is because it's yours. Here, and as in the case we were discussing with the husband in the Nichsei Milug of his wife, the reason why you had it uncontested was because a wife doesn't protest regarding a husband using her things, even if it's rightfully hers and he has no right to. So therefore, it does not establish a chazaka. But the inference the Gemara said was, Ho-ra-ya yesh, but if there is a proof, in other words, if he brings a document that shows that his wife sold it to him, then it would be a valid sale. On that, the Gemara had asked in the previous staff, but why? Why can't the woman say, Nachas Ruch HaSisi Labayli? And that the Gemara answered, because a person doesn't say that when it's something that they own. Since it's her Nichsi Milug, she cannot say, Nachas Ruch HaSisi Labayli. But the Gemara continues asking on this halacha of Hora'aya, yes, but if there's a proof that the wife sold it to the husband, that then the husband could keep his wife's Nichsi Milug and that it's a sale. On that, the Gemara asks, but Omer, Amemer said the following halacha. He said, Ish v'isha shemachu b'nichsei milug. The man or the woman sold the properties of the woman's nichsei milug, which again, there's two types of properties a woman brings into the marriage and gets written up. And the ksuba is nichsei tzer barzel, which is the ironclad properties which the husband guarantees the exact value that they're worth right now she'll get when she leaves this relationship. And then the nichsei milug, which actually the woman owns, but the husband gets to use. He doesn't, unlike the case of nichsei tzer barzel, that the husband even gets like the actual physical properties themselves. Nichsei milug, the woman owns the actual physical properties, but the husband gets the utility, what's called the peiros, the produce of the field. So says a Maimer, if the husband and wife sold this nichsei milug, they have not done anything. Now, the assumption of the Gemara right now in the question is that Amimus Allah was saying that if the husband sells, and then Isha, meaning then the woman sells after him, then they haven't done anything. Why? Because as we had asked in the previous daf, the first question we had asked on the Mishnah's halacha was because she could say, Nachas Ruch HaSisi Labayli. My nichsei milug, I don't want to sell it, but my husband, he's doing it. I don't want to create tension in the relationship, in the marriage. So I went and sold it with him, but I didn't really want to, and therefore, le'asab le'kum. Now, all the more so if she would sell it to her husband directly where he wants to buy it from her, for sure she could claim, Nachas Ruach, I only did it because I want my husband to be okay with me. So then the question then becomes back, which is essentially a reiteration of the first question the Gemara had. Why do we have the inference from the Mishnah if there's a proof that the woman sold it to the husband, that the husband could keep it? But why? We see also from Amimus Halacha, similar as we asked in the first question from the previous daf, that which the Gemara had answered and said no, but here we see from Amimus that it is the case. Even by Nichsei Milug, if the husband sells and then the woman sells it afterwards, it's not going to be valid. Because even by Nichsei Milug, a woman could say, I did it only for Nachas Ruach Labayli. Says the Gemara, no. When Amemer's halacha was being said, he didn't talk about a case when both of them, ish v'isha, that both of them sold it. When it says ish v'isha means either or, if the man or the woman sells it. For example, hechad is of an ihu, where if let's say the husband sold it to somebody else, umis, and then the husband died, then says Amemer le'asab le'kum, meaning asa ihi umafka, then the woman could come and take it away from the one that bought it from the husband, the actual body of the property itself, and all the future produce that's going to come from it at this point in time. Now the reason that is because the husband, his right to sell in this field was only the payers, which only that belongs to him when he's still alive. Now, moreover, even the physical body of the properties, he only has rights that if his wife is going to die when he's still alive and he's going to inherit his wife, then he could sell that too. But if he dies first, then that's what Amemer is saying, that she could come along and take back her nichsei milug from the one that her husband sold it to, because this guy that the husband sold it to, he didn't do anything regarding the fact that if the husband dies with and the wife still being alive, that she could go back and take her own nichsei milug, because she's the owner of the physical property itself. So when Amemer is saying, ish v'isha that sold the nichsei milug, they didn't do anything, it means either one. So if the husband sells it, it hasn't done anything, meaning the wife could go and take it back when he dies. Inami the other way. Zavna ihi, if she goes and sells the actual body of the property without the payers, because she cannot sell the payers when the husband's still alive, because it's the husband's when she's still alive, because since he has to redeem her from captivity, from being a captive, she has to give him the payers of her nechse milug. Now, so if she sells but however the body of the property, which that is hers, and then afterwards umesa, and then she dies, so she hasn't done anything. In other words, we don't say that, wait a second, after now that she's dead, the husband doesn't have any peiris, because the whole reason why he has the peiris in the simulog is because he's going to redeem her. Now that she's dead, there's no more case of redeeming her from being a captive. And moreover, the actual body of the property, although usually a husband inherits his wife, here maybe you would say that he does not inherit her, because even though he usually inherits her, but that is only, you wouldn't say that over here, because here the woman already sold it to someone else before she died. And that's what the Maimer is saying, that no, you cannot say that. Rather, asa ihu amapik, he could also now go ahead and take it away from the one that she sold it to. Why is that? Didn't she sell it off like a father? A father that the son inherits the father. The father sells it off before he dies. The son does not inherit it. It goes to the one he sold it to. Why don't you say something with the woman who sold it off, which she owned the actual physical body, the property, before she died? Why is that saying loy maklum and that the husband could take it away? Is because that's b'tikanda d'rabbanan. That's based on the following takanda d'rabbanan. Could you be Rabbi Chanina? He says, Ba'usha Hiskinu, in Usha, which that's one of the 10 places that the Sanhedrin had gone into exile in the second times of the second base of Migdash, when at that point it was in Usha, as the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, Flamen Alf, and there is where the Sanhedrin instituted the following halacha, that Isha Shemachar B'Nichse Milug Mesa, if the wife sells from her Nichse Milug properties and then she dies, Habal Meitzi Miyad Halakuches, the husband could take it away from the one who had bought it from her when she was still alive. Now the reason for this is the Gemara says in the Bekamet of Tadim and Aleph, it's because the Rabbanan strengthened the lien that the husband has, the rights he has in his wife's property, because of hatred, because if he doesn't have huge rights and that he's going to be upset that he's doing all the support for her. And what they actually did is that they made him not like an inheritor of his wife's properties, but actually like from the moment they get married, as if he actually bought it, as if he's the first consumer. So anyone that she later sold it to, although on some level she could sell it, but when she dies, of course, the first one she sold it to, which is the husband, when they got married, could take it away from that leker who she sold it during her marriage. Now, so then what does it help that the wife could sell it? That's, again, this concept, if the husband dies while she's still alive, then the leker will take it. So that's why she could sell it. But again, regarding actual selling, if she dies first, then it's not a sale because he was the first leker. Now, so that explains that halacha of amema. Amema is talking about not at the same time, meaning either or. Yeah, either or, the sale of Nechse Milug doesn't work. If we're both, the husband and the wife, sell the Nechse Milug to somebody else, meaning he sells what he owns in the property, which are the payers, and she sells what she owns in the property, which is the actual physical body of the property itself. Or if she sells it to him, to the husband himself, then, says the Gemara, Zvine Zvine, then there would be a valid sale. I mean, as we had established on the previous staff, and Rabbi Rav Huna in the Mishnah Masechta Ksubos, which that's how we answered the Mishnah, we're continuing to answer like that. That there, she cannot say Nachas Ruach HaSisi L'Bali, as we had established in the, answering the Gemara's first question in the previous staff, where because when it's her own properties, what's the Nechse Milug, then she cannot make such a claim, I only went along with it because of Nachas Ruach HaSisi L'Bali, because the husband would not be upset with her if she wouldn't be willing to sell her own Nechse Milug. So therefore, that answers the Gemara's question. Therefore, there is an appropriate deek we had from our Mishnah that only the husband cannot establish a chazak in his wife's property. But if he has a proof that he bought it from her, it would work, because if he has witnesses or a document that his wife sold it, Nechse Milug, it would be a valid sale, because there she cannot say, Nachas Ruach HaSisi L'Bayli. Amem was told, only when one of them do, then as we establish that either one, when the other one dies, could go ahead and take it away from the Lekach. Or the Ibai Seima, says the Gemara, if you want, you could say to answer the question from a Meimar, that a Meimar, even if you want to say that he's talking about, that it is when it says Ish V'Isha, it means both of them did together sell it to one individual. And even there says a Meimar, the Le'osab Le'klum, that they haven't done anything. And that even if he first bought it from the husband and then he went and bought it from the wife, and for sure, where she went and she sold it to the husband directly, that it's not going to be a sale. But still, that's not going to contradict the halacha of our Mishnah, which we had inferred that it would be a sale to the husband. And the reason for this, why it's not a difficulty, is because Amimer da'amak Reb Elazar. Amimer holds, and he was saying like Reb Elazar, who he learns his reasoning from Psukim, that when you have something that's owned by two partners, where the body is owned by one and the payers, the utility is owned by another one, then neither one of them have the ability to sell it. Because this one's not the owner, because you don't own the whole thing, and neither is this one the owner. And therefore, that's why Amim was saying that if the husband and wife, who each one only owns one part, when they sell it, it's not a valid sale. Now, in contrast, our Mishnah are the like Rabbanan who disagree with Rabbi Elazar. And that's why our Mishnah says that if there is a sale of the Nechse Milug, where she sells it to her husband, now both parts, where the woman could sell just her part of Nechse Milug, which is the property, that is going to be a valid sale. And there you cannot say that Nachas Ruach HaSisi L'Bayli. Well, what is his opinion of Rabbi Elazar that Amim is going like? It's a time like we learned in the Braisa. HaMoicher is Avdei, if someone sells his slave, U'Paisik Imoy Shishem Sheno. Now he makes up with the guy he was selling it to, that this guy, this slave, is going to still work for the original owner for a period of Shleishim Yom, for 30 days, meaning I'll sell it to you now, it's yours, but I still need him for the next 30 days, I have something I'm busy with, I got to use the slave, he's mine, I'm using him for the next 30 days. So there's a four-way machloikis regarding what is the halachic status regarding this Eved, in regards to the one who kills him, what's going to happen to the one who kills him, as the Gemara, as the Braisa says. Remeyoimer, he says, Harishain, the first owner, the one who sold him already, but he's still using him for the next 30 days, if he hits the slave and he dies after a period of 2 days because of what he had hit him, Yeshne Bidin Yom O Yomayim, he qualifies for what the Pasuk says, that if after he hits the slave, for a day or two, he's going to still be standing, and only then later does he die, let's say on day four. Then says the Pasuk Lo Yukum, the Pasuk in Shemes Chaval Chafal says that you don't take revenge against the master that had killed him, and he's going to be exempt. Now the chiddush of that is because in contrast, if someone would hit a regular Jew who is his friend, and then that Jew would die because of this injury, even if after a year, then that guy would actually be executed, as we learn out from Benika Hamaka, which as the Gemara Sanhedrin of Ayin Chesma Beis says, that we first put the guy in jail to see, we hold him in the cell to see what's going to happen to the guy that he injured, because if he ends up dying, even after a year, we do kill him for having murdered his friend. Now, why is the first guy qualified to be considered the Adoin, which the Pasuk is only talking about the master of the slave, of the Eved Kanani, if he hurts him, and then he dies after Yom Yomayim, a period of 24 hours, and this, after 2 days, and then he dies, and then he's exempt, why is that applied to the first master? Meshu Tachtiv. Because for these next 30 days, and during the time period when he hit him and then he died, he is beneath him, working for him. Now, because the Pasuk says, Umeis Tachas Yodoi, if he dies underneath his hand. Now, the first guy, he's still tachtav because he's working for him. So there, the first guy will have the exemption of Yom Yomayim. But Vahasheni says, maybe regarding the second guy, the guy who already bored him but is not working with him yet, if he would hit him during those 30 days and he would die after 2 days, Einu B'din Yom Yomayim. He would not have the exemption of a day or two if he hits him and then he dies. Rather, he would actually get killed for having killed him. The reason for that is because Eved Kanani, a non-Jewish slave owned by a Jew, actually has a halacha as a regular Jewish man, because we learn that law from Isha, and Eved Kanani has the same halacha as a Jewish woman. And just like a Jewish woman, if someone would kill her by mistake and she would die only after a few days, would get killed, so too by the Eved Kanani. Now, the reason for that is because B'mnisha in a tachtav. The reason why the second master doesn't have that exemption is because he's not working underneath him now, although that he owns him. So explains the Gemara, Kesavah, is because Remeo holds Kinyan Peiris, the acquisition of the utility, which is the Tashmish that the first master has for the next 30 days, that's Kikinya Guftami. That's like the ownership of the actual, as if he bought the physical Eved himself. Now, whereas the one that does not have the Peiris, his acquisition in the body of the slave really has no worth whatsoever, because the whole purpose of the body of the slave is only to have its payers, to have its utility. So therefore, the Remei holds the first one is called the Adoin, because he gets the utility for the next 30 days. Now, Rabbi Huda, I mean, he disagrees. He says, no, Hasheini Yeshna B'din Yomimayim. The second one is the one that has the exemption of the day or two. And the reason is Neshu Kasbay, because he has a different inference from the Pasuk. It's because the Pasuk says, Lo Yukami will not get revenge taken to him, this master who had hurt and killed the slave. The Pasuk says, Ki Kasbay, because he's his money. Now, that means to say the one who has the money, the monetary rights, the ownership of the physical Eved, is the one that's considered his Adin, and that's the second guy who already bought him. So because he's his Kasbay, he's his money, so he has the exemption. Harishan ain't a b'din yamimayim. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says the first guy does not have that exemption, and the reason is she'ain't a kasper because he doesn't own him anymore. He already sold him to the second guy, and explains the Gemara because k'savik kinya peris lafki kinya gufta. He holds that the ownership in the property in the utility is not considered like the ownership of the body itself. And if the first guy who has the kinya peris is not like the other, and therefore he would not have that exemption in contrast to the second person. Third opinion, Rabbi Yisim, he says as a katin tamidveis, that Shneim Yeshnan B'din Yomimayim. They actually both have this exemption of if he only dies after 2 days, that they're not going to get killed. And the reason is Zeb Neshu Tachtav. The first guy, because he's Tachtav, which the Pasuk mentioned that element, because he's working for him now. Zeb Neshu Kasbay. And the second guy, because he has the element that he owns the guy. Now, as the Gemara explains, because the Mesafkele, Ikinya Perske, Ikinya Yuftami, Ilavke, Ikinya Yuftami, he's in doubt, he doesn't know, does the ownership of the utility, is that considered the ownership of the body, or is it not? Meaning, we don't know in either one, is he considered the one who is the other? Because the first guy has the Kinyah Peres, and the second guy has the Kinyah Guf. But which one is the Kinyah Guf? Is it the Kinyah Peres or is it the Kinyah Guf? Now, because of that, the Safek Nefashis, the doubtfulness regarding the lives of the owners who had killed who had hurt the Eved, and then he died, so who has to get executed because of hurting him? That is Lahakal. That now, regarding the execution of the one who hit him, that we interpret leniently because the Pasuk says, Mamin Balamet Hey, which we learn out, says, Beshafto Eid Betzilu Eid, which we have to judge leniently regarding capital punishment. So since we don't know who is the owner to be exempt, both of them we have to go leniently. Now the fourth opinion, which that's what we're bringing it in for, is Rabbi Lazam, he says, no, Shnehen, both of them. In other words, if either one of them kills him, they will be killed, and they don't have the exemption of the day or two. Why? Zeh, the second one is lafishe in the tachtav, is because he doesn't have the whole ownership of the slave, because he's not working for him right now. Zeh, the first one, lafishe in the kaspa, he doesn't have the exemption because he sold him already, and he's not his money anymore. Now, V'amar Rabbi explains to my time in Rabbi Lazar, what's the reason Rabbi Lazar? So who cares that you don't have, this guy doesn't have the kesef element, and this guy doesn't have the tachtav element? Amakraz, because the Pasuk says, Layukim, he's not going to get revenged. Ki kasbehu, because he's his money, he owns him. Now, that's superfluous, because how is that giving a reason to say that he doesn't get revenge because he's his money? Or, alternatively, the superfluosity is because it could have said, ki kasbehu, because he's just money. Why does it have to say, because it's kasbeh, it's his money? Coming to tell you, says Rav, an explanation of Rabbi Lazar, kasbeh hameyuchadlo, it's only because he's exclusively his money. Oh, when he's not exclusively his money, when he doesn't have tachtav, or he doesn't have the kesef element, so that he's not exclusively his money, someone else has some rights, then you're not considered the ultimate adin to say the exemption of Yemi Yemayim, and therefore both of them will get capital punishment if they end up killing him. Now, says the Gemara, therefore a Amemer was learning out the same thing regarding Nichsi Milug. Because since Nichsi Milug are not exclusive, not for the man, not for the woman, because the man has the Peres, and the woman has the Guf, so it cannot be considered, can't be called neither the field of the husband, neither the field of the wife. And therefore, if both of them sell it, it's not going to be a valid sale, and both of them can retract, like someone who sells something that's not his, where it's not going to be a sale. And neither here is it considered a valid sale, because neither of them has the full ownership. It's not kaspa hameyuchadloi. That's the same theme that Amim was going on. That's not a contradiction for our Mishnah. Where yes, our Mishnah was saying if the husband buys it from the wife, it will be a valid sale, because you cannot say nachas rechasis lebaili. And although Amim is saying that it's not going to be a sale, that's only because the wife can't sell it, because she doesn't own the whole thing. And Amim is going like the opinion of Rabbi Lazar, who says that you only are considered the owner if you own the totality of the thing. But if you don't, then you're not considered the full owner, and therefore you have a Mamer's halacha and you also have Rabbi Lazar's halacha, where you're not going to have the exemption of Yemi Yemayim regarding an Eved that you have only, that you're missing an element, whether it be Tachtav or Kasbah. Now, the Gemara asked regarding this halacha that we're speaking about from our Mishnah that said, V'leila ish chazaka b'nichse ishtei. Like we said, that the husband does not have cannot establish a chazaka, where although he's been using his wife's nichse milug for the past 3 years uncontested, that does not establish a chazaka. The Gemara wonders. Now, obviously, it sounds like that the wife does not have to protest when the husband's using her property. Now, and therefore we're saying that from the fact that she didn't protest, it's not establishing that he has a chazaka. Now, that the Gemara asks. But for Amar Rav, Rav said that Eish Es Ish, a married woman, if someone else takes possession of her nichsi milug, tzricha limchais, she has to protest. Because that other person, if she wouldn't protest, would have a chazaka, and therefore if she does not protest, she's going to lose her nichsi milug. Now, on that asked the Gemara B'man. Regarding whom did Rav say that by married woman she has to protest? Who is it that's taking possession? As the Gemara explains, Ilem ba'acha, if you can entertain to say that it means some other random person that's not her husband, which this is all concluding the Gemara's question, and he's the one that Rav is saying that she has to protest, and if not, she loses it. And that the Gemara says, you cannot say that's what Rav said. Because Vamar Rav said a different halacha. He said, no one could take possession of the properties through a chazaka of a married woman, because she could say, I was relying on my husband that he will protest and he'll contend, and that's why I was silent. Now, therefore, what you see is that regarding anyone but the husband, Rav was saying that they cannot have a chazaka because, first of all, the wording ein machzikin, it sounds like it's plural. It sounds like all other people. And moreover, if it was referring to the husband to say that he cannot make a chazaka, well, that's the Mishnah already, which says loy leish chazaka b'nechse ishtei, and therefore, what would Rav be teaching? So El Olav rather says the Gemara must be that the first halacha of Rav that said that a married woman has to protest must have been talking about Bebal, if the husband is taking possession. So obviously you see from Rav that the husband could make a chazaka, and therefore the woman has to protest. Now, that means the halacha of our Mishnah is difficult to Rav, because our Mishnah says that a husband cannot make a chazaka, and therefore that she does not have to protest. So how do we reconcile the first halacha of Rav and the halacha of our Mishnah? Some Rav says not difficult. Lo'olam b'bal. Truthfully, it's regarding the husband that Rav was talking about, that if the husband takes possession of his wife's assets, that Rav was saying that the woman has to protest, because actually the husband could create a chazaka. Now, that seems to be directly contradicted from a Mishnah that said a husband cannot make a chazaka in the wife's properties. Now, that explains the Gemara, because Rav was talking about that he didn't just use the payrus, harvest, and do all those things, because you're right, that would not make a chazaka. Rav was talking about kagan shechava b'bayis shichin ma'aris, where he was digging all these different types of pits in his wife's nichsei miluk. Now, the rights that he had in his wife's property were only for payrus, that it's meshubatim to nichsei miluk for his wife's properties, but not to ruin the land by digging pits all over it. Meaning, as Rashbam explains, we're talking about a field which is not made generally for digging pits in it. Now, therefore, Rav was saying over there the husband would have a chazaka, because there for sure the chazaka is telling us, which it's always a symptomatic, that he probably borders from the wife, and therefore he's ruining it according to the needs that he needs. And it was in such a case that Rav said that she would have to protest, because the woman would definitely protest if this was her nechsei miluk, because he's ruining her property. It's only when you regularly use the payrus, well, there he's supposed to, then of course she's not going to make, and therefore it's going to be a chazaka. But here it's talking about that by Rav, she has to protest is when he's digging pits in it. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, on this answer of Rava, the Gemara says, but v'amar of Nachman amar Rav Barvua, he said that in chazaka l'nizakin, in other words, that when someone is damaging someone else's property, then the one who's creating the damage cannot claim, well, you see, I'm doing all these harmful things to this property. You know why I'm doing it? Because I own it. I bought it from this person. You see, for 3 years, I've been taking possession of this land by digging pits and all these different things. And that says, Rav Nachman, that does not establish a chazaka, because the other one, the original owner, could claim, what do you mean? Everyone could tell you're just damaging and ruining my property. Of course I didn't protest, because I don't have to say. You didn't establish a regular chazaka. So that's Rav Nachman's halacha, that does not establish a chazaka. So how can you say the case is Tolman of Rav, that she has to protest, because if not, it'll be a chazaka when he's ruining her property? That's nizikin, that's just damages. Damages doesn't even make a chazaka. So how can you say that's the case that would establish a chazaka for the husband? Amen, the Gemara says, no, that's not what Rav Nachman said. Say, ain't din chazaka, that you don't have the regular laws of chazaka, which actually usually mandates a possession of the land for 3 years, that does not apply l'nizakin when someone is taking a chazaka by creating damages, because there, to the contrary, there it's actually a stronger chazaka, it's going to be immediately a chazaka, because a person would not see someone destroying their property and be quiet. Rather, they would immediately protest. Now, where the person does not protest, it's their loss, and they automatically lose the rights to the field. So therefore, the married woman that Rav said has to protest was actually saying that immediately she has to protest, because since we explained the case of Rav is talking about where the husband's digging pits in it, where a person would not see someone damaging their property and be quiet, and therefore it was in such a case that Rav was saying that the husband would have a chazaka if she does not protest. Or Iboy same, or if you want, says the Gemara, that actually you could say that, no, Rav's halacha that said that the married woman has to protest, and if not, there would be a chazaka, it means after 3 years. Even as we're explaining the case that's talking about where the husband is digging pits in it. Which we had originally explained that's what Rav was talking about. Now, though we had a question that Rav Nachman says, in chazaka l'nizakin, that, which again, the simple translation was that you cannot establish a chazaka when you're doing damages. So that's what the Gemara is saying. That was not referring to when the one who's taking possession of someone else's land for 3 years was doing it through a way of causing damage, like digging pits. No, if you made a chazaka, if you've been on this land for more than 3 years, even though you've been causing damages, that would establish a chazaka. And that's what Rav said, that the woman has to protest when the husband's doing it, even though it's the husband. Rather, Rav Nachman's halacha was talking about when someone his chazakah is not on the other person's property, but the chazakah is that I've established that I could make damages. Meaning, even if the person's in their own property, but they create things, they're doing certain things, science experiments in the house that cause a lot of smoke and bad odor. And now, what Rav Nachman's coming to say is that even if this person's been doing this for many years, that does not establish a chazakah that you're allowed to damage your friend. Not about taking possession through something that's causing damages. That would establish a chazakah, because the person's been there for more than 3 years, even though they've been harming the field, you should have said something. It would establish a chazakah. What Rav Nachman is talking about is, as the Gemara says, Lav itma Allah, didn't we say in the explanation of Rav Nachman and Rabbi Bar's halacha, that Rav Mari Amar B'Kutra, he says to him, when someone's in his own property but making smoke, or Zvid Amar B'Beis HaKisei, or he creates an area that's like a lavatory, which is disgusting, as we explained already in Perek Le'achbar, it means to say that you're just doing damages, but not taking possession. That you cannot have a chazakah of allowing yourself to damage other people's property. That is what he said. But if you take an actual possession of someone's property, even though you're causing damages, he would agree to Rav's halacha that the husband digging pits in the wife's land would create a chazakah, because then the wife should have protested at least towards within some point of those 3 years. Now, Rav Yosef Amar, he actually gives a different answer for Rav, why it's not difficult on him from the halacha of our Mishnah. In other words, we had asked that Rav says that by a married woman, so that she has to protest. And we asked who? Someone else? We see from Rav clearly that she doesn't have to protest because she could lie on her husband. So who did we say regarding the husband that the Mishnah says that she doesn't have to protest for her husband? So the Gemara's first answer had said that it's talking about regarding the husband, but a different type of case where he's not just taking the peris, but he's actually ruining the field. Now the Gemara is saying that it's actually not talking about the husband. Because actually a husband cannot make a chazakah in his wife's property at all, like the Mishnah says. Rather, lo'ilam ba'achar. It's talking about where someone else takes possession of her properties. That's where Rav was saying that she has to protest. Now the question was, but we said, but we have a different halach of Rav that said, e'machzikin minichsi eishes ish, that no one else could take possession of a married woman's property, because she could just say she relies on her husband. And that says the Gemara, that's not difficult. Because when did we say that someone else cannot take possession? That was told by when the husband was still alive. Where there we say that if he takes possession of the wife's property when the husband is still alive for a period of 3 years, it's not going to be a chazakah, and she doesn't have to protest, because like we said, she could say, I was relying on my husband. Or moreover, let's say he's talking about a case where the woman could say, well, I know you took possession, and I saw you eating the peiris, but you were only taking what was my husband's. That's what he sold to you. Because although you're eating the pears, my husband's allowed to sell the pears because he gets the pears. But the actual property, which is mine, that he could not have sold to you. And for that, you don't have a chazakah in my property by eating the pears. Because since my husband has the pears, and everybody knows that he's allowed to have the pears, and therefore, that what he sold to you, I wasn't concerned to protest. Now, however, what we're talking about is ukegoyin sha'achla. We're talking about where the lekech, the consumer, had eaten miktsas chazaka b'chayei bal. He had eaten part of the chazaka, meaning had part of establishing his ownership to this field, when the husband was still alive, who was the one who sold it to him. But v'shalish la'achar misabal. Then, however, he continued to eat the produce of this field for a period of at least 3 years after the husband had died. It was regarding such a case that Rav said, and then the woman has to protest, as the Gemara is going to shortly explain. Now, this is what Rav was saying. Rav was saying was that a married woman, that her husband sold to someone else from her nichsi milud properties, that she has to protest after the husband died. What's the chiddush in that? Because you would have thought to say that since everybody knows that the husband is the one who sold it to this other guy, not the wife, and even he admits that it was the husband who sold it to him, that then his chazakah that he's doing should not help, even if he's being machzik in it after the husband had already died, because he cannot claim that to the woman that, oh, you sold it to me after the husband died, and I ate it, you see, for more than 3 years. You would think that he cannot say that, because since originally it was the husband who sold it to him, and it was only the peiris that the husband had the rights to, it's only that he sold to this other person. And therefore, actually, this guy would have the halachic status like an aris, like a sharecropper, who when he originally comes into the land, everyone knows he's coming to only have the peiris.
he cannot come and claim later on, as the Gemara said in Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph, oh, that I bought it from you. What do you mean? We know you don't have a chazaka. We know that you're here just for sharecropping, for getting the payers. And therefore, you would think that therefore the woman did not have to protest, because everyone knows that he has no rights in it. That's a Rav's teaching, that no, she has to protest after her husband died, before this guy makes a chazaka in it, for the 3 years after she is the rightful owner and the husband was dead. Because you're right. Although that originally it was bought to him from the husband, he could still claim like this. The husband sold me actually the body of the property that if he's going to inherit you, I'm going to be the rightful owner. Now, but if he dies before you, so then I'm only buying the payers. Now, but immediately when he died, I realized I'm totally removed from the sale because he's dead. And all I had from him was payers. Now that he's dead, you take it over, and you have not only the goof, but the payers now also. So therefore, says this guy, that's therefore it was at that point that I bought it from you, because right now I knew that it became your payers. Now, so therefore, migadi bayo amar, and the gear says lay, but the bach takes it out because actually tahar. Since this lekeach could say, anozavinta minach, I bought it from you after your husband died, and you see, look, I've been here and I've been consuming the produce for more than 3 years. So therefore, even when he ultimately does tell her that I do know that ad zvintalei, that you had sold it to your husband, and afterwards v'zavnin nehali, and your husband sold it to me, meaning the actual body, not just the payers, mehemin is going to be believed. Now the reason for this is because it's not really comparable to the case of the sharecropper, who he cannot claim that, oh yeah, I know I was here for sharecropping, and therefore that shouldn't establish a chazaka like one of the cases in our previous Mishnah. But I want you to know that later on I bought it from you, and therefore I see I've been uncontested for more than 3 years. We can't say that, because generally we assume that a sharecropper, there's no set time for his sharecropping. Rather, we assume as long as he's on the property, it's always been for the sharecropping, so he cannot establish a chazaka. But this guy who bought the property from the husband, on the condition, knowing that if the husband dies first, he loses his sale because the wife's going to take her nixim and look back. There, definitely, we could say that when the husband died, it's as if at this point in time, if he's still staying on the property, as if he went now and took possession of this field now, which is the wife's field. And if she's starting for 3 years, we could say that it's very likely that she did go ahead and sell it to him. We don't view it as one big extension because we know that it stops at that point. It's not like the sharecropping which continues ad infinitum. We know that he only bought it until the husband dies, and the husband died, and now he's still been eating it for more than 3 years afterwards. It's over there that we could say that he'd be believed. Therefore, it's regarding such a case that we said that although she was an aishas ish, meaning she was a married woman when it was ultimately that the person was maxigan it. So you're right, when her husband's alive and she's the married woman, she does not have to be meicha. Like we saw in the other halacha of Rav, that emachzik minichsi eishes ish. But to explain the first halacha of Rav, even though it's someone else who took possession when she was eishes ish, she has to be meicha after her husband died, before this guy takes possession for 3 years, because if he would, then he would be believed to say that after the husband died, he went and bought the property from the wife, because he knew, and it's a new type of taking possession, and if he's there for more than 3 years, it would create a chazaka. Therefore, that's what Rav said, that the married woman, now that she's not married anymore, has to be meicha before it reaches 3 years. Now the Gemara goes and says, Gufa, which ends off this topic, Amar Rav, we had quoted, the Rav said, that no one else can take possession in the property of a married woman, which we had two different interpretations, which the Gemara is going to clarify this. First one saying it was regarding the husband, and the second one was saying this interpretation of Yesu is talking about somebody else. Now, so Rav says that a person cannot take possession of the properties of a married woman. Now, the Gemara concludes this discussion by quoting and reflecting on one of the halachas that we just mentioned. Gufa, we said that Amar Rav, Rav said, that the others cannot take possession of the properties of a married woman. That was the second halacha of Rav that we had used to ask regarding how do you understand the first halacha of Rav. But we say other people cannot take possession. She doesn't have to be meicha, she could have relied on her husband. However, as we continue to talk about Nanav and Aleph, but with the Yonah Gaila, the judges of the diaspora, which refers to Shmuel and Karna, as they're mentioned by those names in the first Perek Masechta Sanhedrin, Amar, they say Machzikin, that no, other people could take possession of the property, meaning if they're on the woman's, even though she's a married woman, on the Nichsi Milug for more than 3 years, they could create a chazaka, and therefore the woman has to be Meicha, she has to protest within those 3 years. So Amar Rav, Rav says, the halacha is like the judges of the diaspora, like Shmuel and Karna. So Amalei Rav Kahana, Rav Asel, Rav, they said, what do you mean? Hadr Beimar Mishmaite, did the master revert from his teaching? Rav was the one we just quoted that says, another one cannot be machzik. And then he goes and says, Allah is like the young girl that says that they could be machzik. So Amalei, he said to them, no, Mistabra Amri, I said that it's logical, where if some of the chazaka that this guy had done was when the husband was still alive, when I said that you're right, but there was another 3 years after the husband had died that then he was still making a chazaka, that's where I said it's logical, like the Dayana Gaila, Kidrav Yosef, like Rav Yosef had explained, where he said that there's logical that there then even Rav would agree that others could be machzik. Because Rav himself, when he said that by a married woman, that she does not have to protest, which we said that sounds like that others, that he said that the woman has to protest, which was his first halacha, which we said sounds like others could be machzik. So Rav Yisrael explained how does that resolve with the second halacha of the Rav that says that they cannot be machzik. He said, you're right, generally they cannot be machzik, which is like Rav's halacha that he was quoted. When he said halacha is like the Yonah Gaila that they could be machzik, was talking about when it was only a little bit when she was a married woman. But then it was more than 3 years afterwards that then they could be machzik. Now, however, the Dayana girl themselves actually dispute Rav in all situations. They say that even if it wasn't the way Rav Yosef explained it. But they were saying that in all situations that someone else could be machzik. She can't say, oh, I was relying on her husband. Rav that agreed to them was agreeing only in the way that Rav Yosef had said it. Now, actually, Rashbam points out that it's the Gemara that was abridging the words of Rav. Rav himself didn't say that he was saying it like Rav Yosef because Rav was many generations before Rav Yosef. It's just the Gemara who's abridging and saying that, no, Rav answered that I was saying, when do I agree to the Yana Gaila that the others could create a chazaka in the properties of a married woman is like, again, as the Gemara says, as we had said before, that if the husband had sold it to someone else, when the woman was still married to him, where again, then a different person cannot create a chazaka. Because everyone knows that it's only he's coming from the payers which a husband has the rights to, but not the gufa karka. But if he then is machzikin it 3 years after the husband had died, that's where I would say it's logical that the yana gaila, that then he could create a chazaka, because then he could say that he went and bought it from her after the husband died, and therefore she has to be meicha. But you're right, in general, a regular case of when the husband's alive and someone's machzik, then Rav still disagrees with the yana gaila, and he holds that im machzikin menichsi eshesir, someone else cannot take possession of the properties of a married woman and establish it as a chazaka, as if he bought it from the woman, because she says, no, I didn't protest because I relied on my husband that he was going to protest, and therefore it doesn't indicate that I agreed that I had sold it to you and I did not sell it to you.